Welcome to Real Stories, a show that has honest conversations from the heart. I invite you to sit back, relax, and allow our guests to speak their truth.
Hello, I'm Tanya the Communication Doctor, and welcome to Real Stories. I just want to say, I come from a family where people didn't always speak their truth. And I think it's so important to speak their truth. And every day I meet people who, because of society, are just walking with that facade because they feel that it is the way to be. And in Real Stories, I want people to know the real story behind the facade. And that is why I do what I do. Hello, this is Real Stories, and I am your host, Tanya the Communication Doctor. And today on my show, I have the lovely Doug Faulkner. Hello, Doug.
Hi, Tanya. I am lovely as well, and modest, apparently.
You are. You know what? When I first met you, Doug, I thought you had such vibrancy, such great energy. So I just wanted to share that with everybody.
I do get that piece of feedback a lot, which is always lovely to hear. I'm not really sure. I guess I kind of know why, and it does. We'll talk about it in a bit more detail, but it does tie into why I do what I do. But it's always a such a lovely piece of feedback. I mean, who doesn't want to be told that their energy is nice? That's great, isn't it?
Well, that's what it's all about. We've got to share the love at the end of the day. That's what it's love. The world's about love, and we've got to share our love. I do believe so. Yeah. So you describe yourself as a sprint performance consultant. Could you explain what that is to my audience, please?
Yeah, in a nutshell, it's a consultant who helps people move quicker in their career than the market is moving. And that essentially, in essence, in my practice, means identifying blockers and then obliterating them. Obliterating them?
No, I love it. I love it. It's like a fast track. You're basically saying you're fast track to kind of get to where you need to get to, you know?
Yeah, in essence, it's obliterating them by having a really clear understanding of what you're amazing at, turning that up, tuning into it, turning it up, and also using the magic of wherever that comes from on the things that you're not fabulous at. Yeah, if that makes sense.
So give me an idea of your kind of the people that come to you. What sort of clients do you attract?
So I attract almost a bit like, as far as energy is concerned, let's start with a bung bung sort of hippie alarm kind of chat, as my friend likes to call it. I attract people who are open-minded, are very, very passionate about what they do, and a bit exhausted by something that's blocking them becoming cyclical. And it can be teams and it can be individuals. So I work with both. And as far as career-wise, it doesn't really have a pattern. I guess potentially maybe more in creative, but not necessarily. It can be, I've worked with people across all industries on all levels. It really tends to be people who are the kind of people who they're the opposite of a bag of sand. You know, they walk into the room and they're like, right, what can I learn about this room? And do you know, and they're the kind of people who are so passionate. And that on my, as far as I'm concerned, that is a 50% of winning is attitude, obviously.
No, totally.
Yeah, and they're the people that have tried that, and for some reason, they're banging their head against a particularly cyclical brick wall.
Yeah, that's brilliant. That's brilliant. So open-minded, passionate, but also blocked. So they kind of need to come out of those blocks. To just throw something back at you, what are you passionate about?
So I guess that's partially what I'm really passionate about. I mean, to focus on my work, what I'm really passionate about is unleashing people's potential. So I really want to be able to watch people be innovative around how they think and feel about their purpose in the world.
Yeah.
And specifically what that looks like day to day. Because it's always lovely, you know, to get inspired by bumper stickers. But the reality is I want to know what that means when I get out of bed. I want to know what it means when someone shoves me on the tube. I want to know what it means when someone is snappy or brittle. I want to know how you find your way through the day to day. you know, the nuts and bolts of the day. I want to know how you can make that how you can get energy behind all those moments as well. So, you know, because it's all very well and good to have a kind of a positive outlook, but how do you create a positivity in the granular parts of the day?
You know what, that's beautiful. So what I'm hearing is that you just love people and you love to learn about people and you want to help people. And I think that's absolutely lovely. I mean, that's what I'm hearing in terms of from an intuitive way as you're talking to me there.
And well, you are very intuitive, Tanya. Let's just be honest about that. How would you be the doctor that you are if you were?
Oh, bless you. But yeah, I just kind of picked that up as I'm talking to you there. But you know what? I want to ask you, were you always this connected, or were you always this passionate about helping people? Was there a time that you didn't feel that way?
Yeah, I mean, where do I start with this one? I think there was definitely a moment. I wrote comedy for a while for television, and I performed comedy, and I honestly thought that was my passion. I thought, this is the thing that I really, really want to do. And Lord knows, I still love a giggle. And if somebody turned around and said, hey, Doug, here, have a sitcom, I'd be like, in it to win it. But I would never not want to turn my energy to supporting people in releasing their potential in any way. And I think when I had worked in comedy for a long time, and it is a really tough business, and I came out of it quite suddenly, and I needed to use everything I'd learned about business and everything I'd learned about performance and comedy and create some kind of more universal revenue source for myself, essentially. And so I invented my own career, and then found out that there was lots of parallels already in the world. And I think what I realized was that the comedy wasn't my ultimate and only goal, because it's so egocentric. My ultimate and overall goal was to just create a bit of joy in people. Do you know what I mean? Or not even create the joy, because that's still a bit self-centric. It's to release the joy in people. And yes, I have always been that person. And there's lots of, I think it's pretty, you go back into my history, you can pretty much see why. But there's that whole nature-nurture argument, isn't there, Tanya? You never really know it. It blitz.
Yeah. No, totally, totally. And you know what came to my mind as you're talking there? I remember myself going to the V&A, going to see an exhibition, and I brought this book that said, don't get a job, make a job.
Yeah, really?
I can't remember who the author is, but it's literally called Don't Get a Job, Make a Job. And I think I put it on my Insta or something at one point, but it's just such a great book. And it's basically a book for creatives. And just as you're talking there, that's exactly what you've done. You thought, you know what, I've got all these skills, let me create a job. And I think a lot of people do it, but I feel that's where the success is as well, because you're being truly authentic in terms of doing what you really want to do and supporting people. And now there is, you know, I think that now is a time, just coming back to our current climate right now with coronavirus and... you know, everything, a lot of places are shut down. I mean, right now we're still able to kind of move around at least. And the schools haven't closed yet, so I'm just praying they don't. But in this current climate, I feel like you need people like yourself, Doug, you know, to help lift people up.
I mean, you're 100% right. And it's definitely... my favourite phrase, which I did think up myself, is when life gets bumpy, bounce. Because you need to put energy into and levity into everything that you do. And I think it's what creates space for innovation. And innovation is just being adaptable. And that's what we are as human beings. That's our strongest trait, is that we are 100% adaptable, and it's completely limitless. The only limits to our ability to adapt is our imagination. And your imagination, as far as I'm concerned, sits in the child part of who you are, and the child part of who you are needs light and levity in order to breathe and tell you all of its lovely, joyful secrets. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, no, totally. And talking about the child, that's my next question, actually. That's when I do what I call, I dive in deep and go back into time. I go back into time and I want to take you back, let's say, to when you were about 10 years old.
Yeah.
What did you want to be when you were 10?
Do you know, when I was when I was, if I'm brutally honest, the underarching motivation of my childhood was always been, I wanted to be a mum.
Oh, brilliant. I love that. I love that.
Not a dad. I didn't want to be a dad. I wanted to be a mum.
Oh, it's beautiful. So tell us why. Tell us why.
I think because I've always seen it's the seat of nature, do you know what I mean? And I think mums have the power, they have the most power. Do you know, the hand that rocks the cradle and the rest of it. You know, there's the ability to bring life into the world, to influence it from that level of connection. Do you know what I mean? This is part of your body which has grown and got bigger and become independent. Your ability to influence the way people are. And it's interesting, and we'll talk a bit more about my background and where that comes from, but it's for the earliest memory I've ever had is about being a mum. And then it was quite soon after that, it was about being like an actor and a performer, but that was mainly because that's what other people told me that I should be and wanted to be.
Yeah,
because they do that, don't they? Adults totally project on children. I read this book ages ago, I think, called How to Be a Real Boy, and they were talking about part of the reason that so many boys are diagnosed with attention deficit disorder is because of what's projected onto them, and part of that is about, you know, a abrupt emotional disconnection and what that can do to a developing brain. You know, like they're talking about even babies. You know, when a boy baby cries, people's instinct is to show them the face that they should have, and when a girl baby cries, their instinct is to reflect the face that they have. So it's instant empathy and projection, to be gender specific. And I think when I was a kid, I just remember lots of people in a really encouraging way, you know, saying, you know, you should be this or you'll be this. You know what it's like. I'm sure you had the same experience, didn't you?
You know what? I love the fact that you've touched on that, Doug. Because, I mean, I've had a couple of podcasts where some of my other, what you call it, females have gone there and have spoken, but it's so lovely of you as a man to talk about this whole idea of the way that we separate us as male and female from a perspective of emotional intelligence. It's like sometimes as human beings we have the lack of emotional intelligence with men, and we all know with regards to mental health that there's this huge suicide rate for men over women, and it's higher. We all know about that. We all know that men don't talk. We all know, so, but yet there's still people are still looking at their children, and when their children cry, they're just kind of saying, pull yourself together, or come on, don't, you know, rather kind of allowing them that space to kind of connect. And you know what, in my experience, I was brought up in a household of all women. So it was just women. But every job that I've had, I've worked with men. So I did the young offenders, worked with boys. When I worked with mental health, worked with men. When I was teaching, I did. So it's really interesting how that has happened. And that wasn't that I went out to get it. It was the jobs that were offered to me. So it's almost like the world wanted to teach me about men. But in my discovery, it's funny, but my discovery, I actually feel that men are actually quite sensitive.
Sorry, go on.
Yeah, I feel that men are quite sensitive in comparison to women, and they've got nowhere to go with it. So it's almost like you're always putting on this facade, this bravery, I can cope, I can do this, I can do that. Because that's what the world wants to see. And it's really interesting. It just kind of made me think, because I was, I don't know if you had a chance, but I got a chance to see the exhibition Masculinity at the Barbican just this
weekend. I've not seen it yet. Well, it'll be closed now, but
I'm
because of the Lurgy. There's so many things I'm planning to go to. Yeah, I definitely want to go and see that. Yeah, but go on.
But that kind of just, what you were saying there, just triggered, because it was basically such a great exhibition in terms of, as you were walking around, kind of seeing these whole perceptions of what they used, the cowboy, the army. But when you actually looked at some of that photography, you know, you could see the innocence in the eyes and the stress. Yeah. You think, my God, that the army, see especially a picture of some guys in the army, I thought, God, they're just boys. They're just boys that have been flung in that position. But that whole kind of thing, okay, I've got to prove myself. And when you're young, it's like, okay, all the boys go out, they've got to fight, women stay at home. And now life has changed, isn't it? We're in 2020 now. Life has changed. Life should be a little bit more equal, but men are still getting paid more than women. I mean, but there's all those imbalances, isn't there, really?
Yeah, like, I mean, yeah. Don't get me started on feminism, because that's what the fun of it. It's heartbreaking, ultimately. I guess the contradiction or the trap that men are in is that they are what they need as a person is denied them, and then what they're given is a privilege that they often either can't handle or don't want. And then they don't get any sympathy because they have that privilege. And I kind of actually can I kind of get that. I'm like, well, sorry, but you know, you've got all these other things. You know, the truth is that something that comes up time and time again with all of my clients, regardless of gender, is that part of the main blockers, a lot of the main blockers, can be that the men involved in any situation are totally single-minded in being achieving the goal, because that's how they've been brought up.
Yeah.
And the women are labelled as empathetic and nothing else. And the reality is that neither of those behaviours or focuses are gender-specific. Mm. Men are brought up to be goal achievers, and women have to become more empathetic because that is the reality of our culture.
Yeah.
And the truth is that I've met unbelievably empathetic men and unbelievably driven women. And I've met both genders who've been different things at different times when it's been relevant. Those aren't gender-specific behaviours or goals. They're human behaviours and goals. And to attach them to a gender is archaic. And you know, I went on the Women's March on Sunday before last.
Oh, amazing.
And I was chatting to somebody. I couldn't get one man to come with me. And eventually my flatmate Anthony came with me. God love him. And my friend Georgie, well, she came as well. But I posted about over and over again. I couldn't get anyone to come with me. And I was getting really a bit heartbroken by the whole thing. Mm. And I eventually said, you know what, people? I'm not here being the great male saviour to women. I'm here because, apart from anything else, this is just illogical. It just doesn't make sense for 50% of the workforce to not have the same opportunities. It makes 50% of us, 51% of us to be exact, just a bit less useful.
Yeah.
And that's just nonsense. It's utter nonsense. There's so little of our behaviour that has anything to do with gender. It's like, you know, and I think that's where the business brain comes in, Tanya. Do you know what I mean? That's where the part of me that goes from emotive to practical, which is, you know, there's a list of tasks that need to get done throughout the day. Get them done. Get the best people. Get whoever's available. Get whoever can do the job right. Get it done. It's just that's all. That's as complicated as it needs to be.
Amen to that. That's what I can say. That makes sense. Totally makes them like, amen. They're like, I'm in church. Yes. Tell us again, Doug.
Preach.
No, but you're right. You're so right. I'm so with you on that. It's just so important that we, as people, just see people as people. And you said something lovely there in terms of human behaviour. You know, just we're all humans. And, you know, if you've got to get something done, you just got to get it done. You want the best people to do it. And I feel that a lot of leaders should adopt that. And a lot of people who are employers, if they adopt that role, rather than just try to mould people or fit people into their world, it just, you know, things would change, really, you know?
Well, you know what, as well, I have to say, this isn't also just all theory, and I'm an autodidact, so I am, and also I'm dyslexic, so I'm, because of the way I think, I've got the privilege of being able to be a very acute observer, and I've had the privilege also of being a white man and being able to sit in a room watching that kind of toxic masculinity, get my teeth in, play out and be able to just sit there and watch it without having to out myself as, you know, a bleeding heart liberal, a homosexual, or any of the things that would turn that privilege of being able to watch off. And I've watched it just be, it's such a nonsense. You basically, and it's part of the reason why I do what I do, because I've seen, and I've seen women behave like this as well.
Yeah.
But when the social contract is narrow and it has that very goal achieving, very tight parameters, then what you actually got is a bunch of adult people doing impressions of the grown ups they thought they should have been when they were kids, and no one is bringing themselves to the table, and it's just not useful. It's just not nowhere near as useful. It literally is like people playing at being grown-ups, and it's, I just don't think we've got time for it in our modern world.
No,
it's
we
like
haven't.
We've got we've got stuff to achieve. Things move too quickly. You know what I mean? We've got all this lovely privilege of a communication revolution. Things can now really pick up and get moving. We haven't got time for that nonsense. We need to show up as whole people, not as, you know, these roles that we've given ourselves.
I love that. I love that idea. And just to go back, you mentioned a couple of things there. You talked also, I love that term, toxic masculinity. I've not heard that before, but I love it. I'm going to use that.
Really?
Now. Yeah, I've not really heard. No, I've not really. Maybe I'm in my bubble too much in terms of thinking about. I mean, I've talked about toxic people, but I've not put the two together. But, you know, I can totally identify with that.
Do you know what, Tanya? The hilarious thing is you've probably been the person who's been dealing with it most. Toxic masculinity. Given the jobs that you've had,
yes,
I love it. You're like, I haven't got time to listen to the labour. I'm too busy dealing with it.
Exactly. Sometimes you don't. You miss things because you're in it. You're too busy in it. You're too busy kind of dealing. But you know the whole dyslexia thing. I find that really interesting because I was labelled dyslexic when I was young, and I wasn't actually.
That's interesting.
But, so it was the other way around for me. I was just a doodler, basically, and in my own world. That's what it was.
Right. No, I like that.
But talking about that, I mean, that, I think that's quite interesting when you said, you know, because that would you, how did you kind of deal with that growing up? Was that because obviously a different time? Was that a barrier for you? And how? Really, I mean, I've learnt now. Obviously, I do a lot of work with special educational needs over the times that I was teaching, and what I have learned is I feel that dyslexia is a power. And in terms of the way you think, some people are a little bit more innovative and they think outside the box. It's everybody else that's got to it's got to keep up. But how did that kind of affect you, and how do you kind of use it now in a positive, just to listening out there and dyslexic maybe?
First of all, bless you for saying that about it being a power, because it's taken a long time for me to, and actually it's a lot, not long time just to accept, but also a long time for me to research and find out about what dyslexic thinking, how ironic, I can't say it, actually is. It's not a learning difficulty. It's a different way of processing information. And actually it's... and I could go on about that for days as well, but I'm not going to. It's been a really tough journey, and it has left its scars. I get triggered sometimes by some things that people, the way people behave around the way I think. And I'm really okay with, so if you ever get an email from me, there will be at the signature something along the lines of, and I haven't read it for ages, but I'm a proud dyslexic with fast thumbs, so please excuse me if there are mistakes.
Oh, I love that. Brilliant.
Because I just, again, I'm like, you know, I'm it's easy to understand what I'm going on about. So please don't focus on if I've got a couple of letters around the wrong way. You know, the truth is, if I was Spanish, I don't think it'd be so much of an issue because they spell everything phonetically. Yeah, I haven't got time for all that. I don't not make an effort, and I always, obviously, the irony is I really am detail orientated, so I really like to proofread everything, and I like to spell check everything. But I've just had to learn emotionally that it doesn't matter what I produce, I will come back to it later and see stuff that's missing.
Yeah.
And it is gutting every single time, especially when you're trying to, when you are articulate and you're trying to articulate yourself. It's a struggle. I've started to use transcribing software on my iPhone. Other phones are available. A lot more, and I find that that's really useful, actually, because the other thing is that I noticed this the other day when I was doing an application for something, is that my brain is quick enough to be able to read something without reading every single word. Understand it completely, because it's had to be. To actually sit and read every single word when I'm reading anything can be exhausting. And the truth is that, not to go too much off into a tangent, but, you know, I know we've talked about this before, but whenever I train people, I do always make sure I talk to them about communication styles and about there being auditory people who are, you know, all about language, digital people who are all about just the detail, visual people, that's self-evident, and then kinesthetic, which is all about, you know, kind of the feel for what's happening. And my question to people is, you know, can you tell that from an email, and can you then also mirror someone's behavior in an email? And a perfect example is if you've ever had an email from somebody which is, you know, almost chapters,
then I can't deal with that.
They're essentially an auditory person. They love words and language, and that's how their brain works, which is which is marvelous. I will always, you know, go back to them if they need me to understand something and say, you're going to need to put this into bullet points. And the truth is, yes, I do it for myself. Yes, I do it so that I can understand it quicker. But I also do it for them to practice another form of, it's like, I love the language. What's the point? Essentially. And I think, you know, the truth is, if I could, I'd have every single meeting face to face.
You know what? This is what you're saying, Doug, for me, is just really powerful, because when I first set up Communication Doctor, I can totally identify with what you're saying, because I used to get emails, or sometimes people I would send messages to people, LinkedIn or social media. And, you know, as I said, sometimes it is just that you are writing really quickly, or you've got predicts text. So basically, sometimes things do not come out as you want them to come out, and then when you send it, it's all probably like, that's why I hate Twitter. Once you've sent it, there's nothing you can do about it.
Do you know what? I said to somebody the other day that predicted text is a bit like shopping online. You get all these really useless alternatives.
Yeah.
They just don't work.
No, but it's funny. But then you will have the people who are incredibly meticulous, or you said like some people who's very auditory. Who come back, I've had them so many times, and I just actually had to say, you know what, I can't work with you. But that's how I've dealt with it, but that's probably me thinking, I haven't got the time. So I love the fact that you have actually sent the email back and say, pull it into bullet points. So, because they tend to come back to me and say to me, do you realise you've misspelled this? Or do you realise there's no comma here? And I just think to myself, you're not listening to what I'm trying to say to you. It's just my pet hate. It's my pet hate, really.
And that's my triggers. You know, when I was at school, I mean, so I'm 45 this year. So when I was 10, it was 1985.
Yeah.
It was about that age that they discovered that I was dyslexic. So it was really late in the day that they discovered it. But then also dyslexia was only really being, talked about as a thing. What they'd done is they put me, you know, I failed my 11 plus, or I was about to fail my 11 plus, and they put me in a special class, right, which was actually underneath the stage at the school. So it was more like a cupboard, and there was four of us in there. So we were, in essence, we were othered. Yes. Othered in the cupboard, is what we are. If I ever write a memoir, that's what that chapter will be called. Othered in the cupboard.
Brilliant.
And then they gave everyone in the school an IQ test. And what I found out later is that they don't have to, that schools are testing kids, and they don't have to tell the parents they're testing them. They don't have to tell the parents the results. And that was certainly true back in the 80s. And I just casually chatted to my mum about it. And she was like, oh, that sounds like a test. So she contacted the school and demanded my IQ results. And it turned out that I had one of the highest IQs in the school.
Amazing.
Gave that to me as fuel for my confidence, because it was really low, and I'd been teased about being, you know, othered in the cupboard. The next person bullied me, I just told him straight, well, you know, sorry, but my IQ is probably higher than yours because I've been tested.
Oh, I love it.
I was immediately suspended.
Gosh, what for saying that? Really?
Exactly.
Oh,
wow. So it's tough, you know, that's some of the baggage I've had to carry around with me. So when I get what you said, when people go, well, you realise you spelt this wrong, I just do exactly like I said before. I just come straight back to people. I'm dyslexic, and it might be a good idea moving forward for you to bear that in mind when you're going to give unsolicited advice. Because essentially, it's exactly what you'd say if you were trans, if you were, you know.
What comparison?
That's what people are having to learn now.
It's
who and what you are isn't the same as everybody else. What you view as a mistake or unusual, that's your interpretation. So I don't think there's anything wrong with making assumptions. I just think there's something wrong with making assumptions that you don't check in first, i.e. I hope I'm not making a bad assumption here, but are you dyslexic because I've noticed this mistake, I just wanted to point it out in case it's useful. is a much kinder way
of
being helpful. And I want those people with that brain to support and help me.
Of course,
I just don't want them to do it in a way that's designed to bolster their own ego.
Because
it's rude.
And yeah, exactly. It's just, that's what I felt. It's just rude, and sometimes it is literally just predict text. Sometimes it's not even dyslexia, it's predict text. I'm in a rush. Or I've got to get this to you. But, you know, but you say sometimes you just have to, and it's a message. It's not, if it's a blog, fair enough, or it's a written piece of work, that's something different.
Yeah. Well, you know, I quite happily, but there's lots of people I know who are super, super clever, are incredibly auditory, and I've had emails from them and they've made mistakes, and I don't point it out, I just smile and go, that's nice and humanising.
Yeah, exactly. We're all the same.
I can let it go, and I'm dyslexic, and I get, but you have to seem to point it out. I'm like, if your ego is tied up in the way that you communicate, then you need to have a little day off.
You know what? I hope anybody that's listening can learn from this if they're one of these auditory people. Totally. Because it's just good to see the other side, isn't it? It's good to see how we receive information. Because we don't talk enough these days. And
We don't.
Everything's via text. Everything's on the WhatsApp. You know, people don't talk enough. People don't communicate. And then you don't always know what someone's really thinking or feeling.
And also, I think, you know, there's the, and this, and I'll shout about this so the cows come home. There's the what to do and the how to be. And my ultimate, if I can give anyone listening one piece of advice, is don't let the process get in the way of the point. You know, just let's all just work together and just kind of focus on what is the thing that's going to serve us best in this. What is it we're trying to actually achieve? What's the bigger picture? Let's just get on with that.
Totally. And on that note, I just want to ask you another question there, because I love what you're talking about. I think it's all really relevant, and
thank you.
I think it's really important for our listeners to kind of see things from another side. But in life, just because your journey just sounds so interesting, but in life, who really inspired you?
Well, there's a question. I think that I think like a good recipe, do you know what I mean? You pick up bits here and there of lots of different people. And I've had inspirational moments. I'm really lucky because I think I'm a relatively good reader of people. I'll tend to gravitate towards anyone who's got a bit of space around them. Do you know what I mean by that?
Yeah, I suppose I interpret that as, when you say a bit of space around them, in terms of that breathing space, that space to think, that space to allow you in, that light. Some people have this shining light, don't they, that you can kind of feel... I can walk to you.
Just a bit of oxygen. Do you know what I mean? They're flexible, they're open. Mm. They've got what I call real gravitas. And real gravitas, really, and essentially, is just a calmness around whatever's coming this way. I'll be able to cope. You know what I mean? And I think, I remember somebody, I had a job once, and it was a residential training course. And it was to teach people everything about how to be a creative leader and how to run creative projects. And it was to teach people who are in very dry industries how to do that, essentially. The people who have to think about the same things over and over again, and they've got very tight parameters, you know, how to really manage their teams and manage people around how to open people right up and jump through. So it's a really, really fun, amazing job. I was there to assist, and actually my boss was there. So the person who managed all of the people that were assisting this kind of, so not the facilitators, not the trainers, we were in with the clients, and our job was to make sure everybody had everything they needed, and also to be the, you know, a representation of this energy and these behaviors. And my particular boss was frustrated and stressed the whole time. And I thought, oh God, what am I doing wrong? And her boss, who was one of the facilitators, said to me, just said, really said quietly, said, Doug, where do you get your self-esteem from? And my mind just went,
wow.
I was like, what? And it totally changed the way I think about everything. And when I coach people, before our first session, one of the two bits of pre-work I give to them is spend this week thinking about where you get your self-esteem from.
Oh, that's interesting, isn't it? Where did you get your self-esteem from?
Yeah, because it's just, I just think that those kind of foundational kind of pieces we never really look at, we just operate from.
Yeah,
You know, and ultimately, just a question is a lovely reminder that it's a choice. Just to look at something means it's something that you thought about and made a choice about, whether you're aware of it or not. And I think that was the person that asked me that question, really kind of, the way I processed that was by giving myself permission to really go in and go, everything I think and how I think about it is a choice. Yeah. There are some things that I'm going to find easier, some things I'm going to find harder. But ultimately, this is all down to me. And you know, the thing they tell you, the thing I love this, the thing they don't tell you when you're a kid, which I really wish they would, is they don't say to you, the decisions that you make now will affect your future in ways that you can't know. And negative or positive, you're going to have to take responsibility for them one way or another. Mm-hmm. So make those decisions with an open heart and an open mind. Be as aware as you possibly can, and then be kind to yourself when mistakes happen.
Yes.
Because that's what being an adult is anyway, isn't it? It's taking responsibility for the things that you chose. You didn't know how they were going to turn out, good or bad.
No, I totally agree with you. The whole thing about responsibility for young people, especially now, I think a lot of, well, it's not, I don't parent in that way, but I have seen that with some people, you know, in terms of kind of this entitlement race, or almost, it's like a race of children. Yeah, I've just got this entitlement, and you're so used to everybody doing everything for them. And I would say my kids are very responsible in that respect. And also, like you say, the forgiveness is important as well. Like you say, forgive yourself, because sometimes children can be really hard on themselves, but that's kind of down to the adults. It's down to what we put out to them. It's how, what they mirror what we do in some kind of respect. And I think just to check in with them, just to say, you know what? It's okay, because I have to forgive myself for stuff every day as an adult. So
same. Oh my God,
isn't it? You know,
I think that real strength and intelligence comes through how much energy you put behind the risks that you take, not how clever you think you're being at reducing risk.
Everything
is a risk. Do you know what I mean? Ultimately, everything's an experiment. It's all a projection. Whatever you choose and think to do right now, is you can't know what's going to happen. I mean, for goodness sake, what's going on in the world right now is a perfect example of that. You know, we can't know. You know, it's incredibly important, as I said, to keep an idea of the bigger picture. What's going on in the world? I mean, bloody Donald Trump, you know, fired his team that could have caught this kind of coming up early. That is a perfect example of somebody who's not got their eye on the bigger picture.
Oh, God, I don't know how he's running the country, but, you know.
But now what is he doing? He's just trying to reduce the risks that people can see. It's like this perfect example of how not to be.
You're right. I'm totally with you 100% when it comes to Trump.
I mean, that was a really cheap example, because, he's a good example of how not to do everything, quite frankly.
Anyway,
off topic.
I know we get very political here, but that's the beauty of doing this podcast and putting things out there, because you know what's lovely about this generation, and positive about this generation, is we can, you know, you can speak, you can say what you want to say, you don't have to hide. You know we all have a voice, and we all have opinions, and I think that helps and contributes to other people. Yeah. You know,
how old are your kids? I think I already know this.
Age 8 and 9, primary school. That's age. Yeah.
Because I kind of feel like, and this is kind of related, it's tenuous, but stay with me. I feel like, and this is going to be so controversial, but teenagers are the best people I've ever met.
Oh, I used to work in secondary school. And people say, how did you do that, Tanya? And it's like, well, I used to love, I'm quite feisty, you see, so I just couldn't, that kind of worked. You know. But that kind of works, really, because I think you just need to have a bit of attitude to work with young people, but positive attitude, because then they realise, oh my God, she's real. They're not expecting you to come back on something, say something. So, tell me about why you love teenagers. Tell me.
Well, I don't love teenagers. I really, really don't love teenagers.
Oh, I like working with them, sorry.
Yeah, but I do think that they are the best people met, and the reason for that is because they're so pure in their idealistic outlook. Do you know what I mean? They're so they don't have the muddied filter of how people can get in the way of the truth. You know, they see a very clean line between, well, this doesn't make any sense, so it should be this. Boom. Do you know what I mean? At the same time, what they're dealing with is in the stages of, and the stage that their development is at, is their brain is now capable of absorbing the reality of total consciousness. So they are getting this subtle message around them, and sometimes for some not very subtle, that they are totally responsible for themselves and the world is essentially arbitrary. And I think that some of them, you know, the troubled ones have only had the negative side of that. They have always been vulnerable. They've never had, you know, and they hate everybody for the fact that they've got a sense of security in there, just as a privilege, and it's assumed security. And my heart breaks for those kids. At the same time, I protect myself from them, because that's all that pure energy is going straight towards making sure everyone understands that truth. But the others, you know, they are, you know, they believe in freedom, they believe in, you know, what they, who they are is as a right to be, you know. And I just think I just think that the people that we should, and I read studies about, you know, there's a chemical imbalance in teenagers' brains which makes them psychotic. So
that's what I was going to say, but that's not there's a technical side to it. But I feel like if they're, as they're learning, as I said, it's really special. As they're learning about who they are and they're going through that puberty, it kind of reminds you as a person, doesn't it? Because you always look back thinking what it was like when I do anyway. Look back. And
well, I never forgot. I saw so many people, you know, around me, just not understand, older people not understanding, and try and making judgments on what I was going through, and I'm thinking, no, that's not how I feel at all, you know. And so I've tried to never let go of it. And and what I remember about it is that you are a new person. That's all you are. Everyone's first time on the planet. You know, it's why I imagine, again, I'm projecting, being a parent is overwhelming for everyone, because it's the first time you've done it.
Yeah, I mean, there's a different. I don't feel it's the first time myself, because I'm spiritually. Yeah. I think we've been. I believe we've been here before, but but I know what you're saying in terms of we're learning. Yeah. You're for that information's there, but yeah, you are downloading. Yeah. I suppose, like you say,
in the context of that, let's put it this way: it's the first time we've been in this time, in this.
You know,
it's totally fair enough. A 100 years ago, gender, race would have given you a completely different experience.
No, totally. Now.
In 100 years, again, it will be different. And it's the first time that these people, they're looking to us to help them navigate the first time of being in this world. And you can't tell people what to do. You can only give them, you know, the tools and the platforms for learning for them to realise what they need to do for themselves.
That's so true, Doug. That's so beautiful. And I'm going to have to bring it to a close now. And I've loved talking to you today. But
I know, we could talk all day. Fun. But I mean, you're talking about, I mean, literally get me to talk about myself. That's like how I get to talk.
But you know what? It's beautiful. It is, I feel that we've touched on so much today. And, you know, in a moment, I will do my Tanya's takeaways. But there is so much there to give, and I think that's such a lovely thing to how we think about teenagers, and maybe when I get to that stage, you probably might need to remind me, Tanya, you were a teenager once, because I think sometimes you get into a space, don't you, when you're a parent, and when you're, because it's interesting, it's different from me being a teacher, working with teenagers, to being a parent, because it's a totally different outlook there.
So
I suppose when you get to that point, sometimes you need reminding, probably by the people around you.
And remember, I'm not saying that that's an explanation, not an excuse for the way teenagers behave.
Totally.
If I've got a passing point, and this is true for everyone, because we're all managing an inner child, and that is that really healthy, happy kids don't have strict parents, they've got clear parents.
I think that's true.
And then remember that when you're parenting yourself.
Lovely. Oh, thank you for all those takeaways. That's pleasure. Lovely to talk to you, Doug.
Oh my God, it's been such a joy, Tanya. Thank you.
Thank you. And I'm just going to say, from Tanya the Communication Doctor and Douglas Faulkner, adios.
Bye.
See you later. One of my biggest takeaways from this show today is, when life gets bumpy, bounce. I loved what Doug said, to create space for innovation. So
Sometimes when you're feeling that everything's a little bit toxic, what can come out of that is innovation and creativity. Thanks a lot. Take care.